If you're in the wrong room, this room's talking about testing the merge with parallel universes. My name is David Searle, and I'm the head of EMEA for a small startup that's been working with the Ethereum Foundation for just over a year now. Who likes bugs? Okay, well, I brought some bugs along with me today, so you're going to have to be like, who would like a bug? Because I've got some bugs that actually I'd like to give to various members of the audience. Anybody? You'd like one? Okay, here we go. Just have to, are you good at catching? So, little bugs. We've been spending the last year kind of really stress testing. Want a bug? So, you see, this is why you should start at the front. I've got three more to go. There we go, see? So, the talk's about testing Ethereum, and it's basically looking at using a pretty sophisticated and unique testing methodology, which is based from a company called Antithesis, which I belong to. The company is involved in using deterministic simulation techniques to allow us to basically explore a whole host of iterations of complex distributed technology that's running in a simulated environment. So let me just get my little clicker. I brought a few stars along to the show. Obviously, I've just explained who I am. Little did you know that Dr. Strange and Cher are also going to participate in this presentation. I've got about 25 years worth of experience just in the tech industry. For the last two and a bit years now, I've been working for this business, Antithesis, and they've basically made me into somebody that's a bug hunter by trade. I never thought testing could be fun, but there's nothing like hitting a seg fault and actually getting a real kick out of it. And that's what I do on a day-to-day basis. This is my house in the UK. You can tell from my accent. And as you can see, I've mostly got a few GPUs that I've got to sell. So if you're interested, please let me know. No joke. the day of the merge came around, and we'd been doing a lot of work with all the various clients. All that hard, arduous testing, making sure that we caught every last bug. What was going to happen? Was it really going to be smooth sailing? I think we saw this morning, which obviously is great news. I was wondering if we were going to see this. You have to press play on the video. There is sound as well, but I couldn't believe this when I saw this, but this is real. Yeah, it's pretty bad, eh? Not my front garden. We don't do it again. testing is really important, and this is where we talk about it, but the merge was a significant event. That's why we had so much celebration across the world about kind of what was really going on when the merge took place. So congratulations to anybody that was involved in the merge. Phenomenal job, and I think we can hold our heads up high there. So, I say testing is hard, and you only got to use Cura to basically ask the question, what makes software testing difficult? It's a bit of a high-level question, apologies for that. But these two really struck me here. Like the first one, this is something that basically fundamentally, this is an impossible requirement because absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence. And so often we run these simulations in parallel universes hitting a whole host of code, and it's clear, and you're like, well, is that good? Who knows? We can only really understand how much coverage we've got, and it may be maybe good, maybe bad. Who knows? So that's a phenomenal requirement. The second one is then about kind of understanding, like, testers have to think about all those possible scenarios where issues may arise and ensure that they are handled by the code, and that's just not. It's just like, how do you approach that with a distributed architecture like we have with Ethereum? We've got a whole host of different clients using different architectures. We've got the execution layer. We've got the consensus layer. It's amazing to see it actually working. But the complexity of that is just phenomenal. If we then look at kind of what Ethereum has done to approach this task, and this is, you know, this is not looking specifically at antithesis, we are a part of the equation, and think very much that we're complementary, is that Ethereum is using unit testing, test nets. We've got a host of shadow forks and test net merges that occurred. Some technologies that are being used called Hive and Ketosis that do similar pieces to the equation. We then have antithesis that is then doing this deterministic piece, which allows us to really, you know, get into the detail of all the different iterations that are possible. And then we have a host of different fuzzing technologies that the Ethereum are using to really try and isolate and kind of hammer areas that are of concern. So, you know, throughout the entire year, you know, a huge amount of testing has been done, and on top of that, they've also used static analysis to help with, you know, doing code audits and making sure that we catch things before the merge was to take place. I'd step back a little bit in terms of kind of the testing is hard statement. You know, it is a phenomenal kind of obstacle to try and get over. Like, how do we find every iteration, and how do we find those hard to reach bugs that, you know, may not be common ground, but if they do occur, will be catastrophic. And so if we just look at the right-hand side, this is a representation of a distributed network. So on the right, we're going to call this node. We're going to call this node using Lighthouse and Geth. So Lighthouse and Geth are running on this node. They're running on an operating system, you know, leveraging CPU. We've got a file system. They've got different processes happening. And then inside those processes, we've got different threads being used as well. So just in its own sort of node, there's a lot of complexity about what's going on. And we can test a node. We can test maybe a combination of Lighthouse and Geth working together, making sure that we're kind of, you know, pushing the boundaries. But if we then think about how we then have a network and we have a whole host of different nodes running together and may have other underlying pieces like databases and other pieces kind of actually on top of that, the complexity of all those different communication channels operating just means that the search space for hidden away little gems, I call them gems, but, you know, they're bugs basically, they can hide away for a long time, and you may never find that search. You may never, when you're looking at your testing, you may never find that particular condition where the network was slow and there was a bit of thread pausing going on in a certain node, and, you know, the number of things that have to happen could have a bug manifest. And so this is really where we step in, because, you know, we then have, you know, the complete picture, and this is what we build inside our simulation. We have the ability to kind of run the entire collection of consensus clients and execution clients in a simulation, run it, and understand exactly kind of every way in which we can actually kind of see outcomes. That's pretty intense. You know, how do you do that? And fundamentally, how do you do that in a deterministic fashion? If we find a certain situation where Lighthouse crashes, well, can we represent that again? Can we replay it? Can we, you know, it's the first thing you do, right? Can we reproduce it? And often bugs are not reproducible. They often, you know, they might try something different. They might move around. How do we debug this? And this is, again, where we step in. So what do? We leveraged the ability to auto-generate networks inside the simulation environment and stand up all the containers that were necessary to bring up Ethereum. We then were able to then use network faults and other types of faults to just inject chaos into that running environment. Obviously, it's great to see the software handle that. It's designed to handle these types of things. So, you know, under duress, we see things going wrong. And we basically use fuzzing technology to basically hit the entire system, not just individual pieces of software, but the entire system is fuzzed. And that allows us to basically kind of, you know, deterministically replay the complete orchestration of a situation, not just one particular application, but we know that in this combination of different clients, under these network conditions, something goes wrong. And so we use strategies inside the system to allow us to seek rare events. And so when I start looking at the numbers and kind of what we've been doing over the last year, you know, we hit a huge amount of code edges, a huge amount. And so how do we find and allow ourselves to seek out those edge cases that, you know, if they do happen, again, can be pretty catastrophic, but, you know, get to them and uncover them to help the client teams debug and fix. So we have the ability to have all this wrapped up in a tool set that is available to ourselves, and we share it to the rest of the client teams and EF, and that's been really, really useful. I think if we look at it, we have the individual testing going on, which is fantastic. We continue to promote that and say keep going with that. We have the test nets and shadow forks. Again, I think, you know, we can all say that they've been tremendously successful and useful. And then we have our parallel universes. We have the ability to run not just one simulation, but we're running simulations literally every day that are generating and using, you know, exploring the various search spaces that exist across any number of different branches inside the repositories. So what does this mean for us? Well, there's a little help from Dr. Strange here. Hopefully you've seen it, because it's not playing. Here we are.
Strange, we all right?
This is what I look like when I'm doing the work.
Be back here.
Hey, what was that?
Went forward in time to view alternate futures, to see all the possible outcomes of the coming conflict.
How many did you see?
14,605,000.
How many did we win?
One.
So for us, winning is finding these edge cases, right? You know, winning isn't like, oh, all tests passed, yay. We want to find those really intricate kind of piece, you know, combinations and iterations where we've covered 14 million different scenarios, and we've got, you know, maybe not more than one, but, you know, we at least have one, you know, we can actually hold a hat on. So that's an example of what we're doing, and we think that kind of represents, you know, pretty good sort of analogy. If we move forward, we've seen it again. Here we are. This is kind of what it looks like in our world. You know, we're looking for bugs. This is an example of an output of just one run. So we ran this 13 hours worth of wall clock time, which is, if you look at the wall and there's a clock on it, it will last 13 hours. It actually allows us to exhaust 536 hours worth of testing. And you can see here, we're talking about an enormous amount of edges being seen here. The branches are kind of how we get decision points. We get like an if-then-else kind of statement inside the code. Very simple example, but just take it. We can basically branch off at that point and exhaust both avenues and actually see what happens in both situations underneath those, under those test conditions. That's an example of a branch. And obviously the code edges seen is we've got the instrumentation happening, so we can see what kind of functions and pieces of code are actually being executed. Pretty insane. No, that's one run, and we've got 180,000 edges that we're seeing across the entire network. It's a busy network, and obviously with all the different clients happening, there's a lot going on. So we see ourselves as a complementary piece. We've been looking at this as a great example of a project where we can basically work alongside all the other pieces that the EF are kind of using and the different client teams are using. So we're just another layer in the growing list of strategies being used. And I think that's sort of testament to the approach that EF have used to really hold on to this resilience, you know, making sure that we take advantage of every way we can make sure that, you know, nothing untoward happens in the future. More and more upgrades coming, I'm sure. So, you know, we've only got 48.4.4 around the corner. I'll say around the corner. We'll see. But it's certainly something to look at in terms of making sure that we're involved at every step of the way. So this is a very simple sort of illustration of what we've been doing. We've been building all of the clients, getting them in place and actually establishing Genesis. So we actually have been using this at a Genesis block and then moving it forward towards the merge. In our world, we would have the merge kind of positioned. We obviously start fault injection. We establish a chain and then we start fault injection to get to a point where we've got a whole host of different faults. You can see them here labeled below. So anything from partitioning, that's a great one, obviously, to encourage forking of the chains. We've then also got, you know, delays happening, drops of packets. The nodes themselves, We can stop. You know, we put these things through its paces. We stop things, we pause things, we kill things, we bring them back up. I suppose, you know, in some respects, it's quite realistic. You know, things do get rebooted and validators come back up again. We have all that kind of like happening inside the simulation. And then from that, we then have, you know, any number of threads being paused, released. It's busy. Every type of this sort of configuration of faults that we put into a simulation is, completely deterministic. So if we know that this ended up with a seg fault, we know we can literally put exactly the same into the environment. It's basically creating a pure function of the entire system, and we know we can get the exact same output, which I think is a tremendous piece of technology which we have under the hood. What are the numbers like? Well, you know, in 1 year we've conducted 31 years worth of 24/7 non-stop testing. That has processed and explored over 50 million edges of code. You know, out of that, and you can see there, you know, out of that we've got 45 validated errors, some of which were catered for, but 33 of them were logged bugs that were pretty catastrophic. Things that really would bring either an actual node down, so panics, seg faults. We'd have, you know, nil pointer exceptions. We'd have, there's one I'm going to bring up in a minute with a little example, but things that you don't want to have, like living in your code base. And I think that's, you know, we would forward those through to the different client teams, and they've been able to eradicate them. And obviously through the successful merge, it's been great to see our efforts put to the test. Who wants an example? Or I'll give you some. Here's an output of our sort of one of the runs. This would come through from an email. Hopefully you can see it. It's a bit of an eye chart. You've seen the stuff on the right hand side, but down here you can see a whole host of assertions that we've got running across the entire network. This is actually flagged up by fail. They've got a fail on a seg fault. This is you know, something that is absolutely real. Sig seg v. Illegal storage access, attempt to read from nil, ? You get some really interesting ones. You get like, you know, please report this, or please fix this. So this is an example here. And we're like, well, what do we do now? How do we take it to the next step? Because it's great saying, well, you've got a problem. This you can see here is actually for the node that's running Nimbus and Geth. So we know there's an issue there. So, okay, fine. Have we got any other occurrences on any other combinations? We do. Okay, that's cool. Let's look at an example of an actual kind of log entry that's coming through. So this is a unified log, the serialized activity that's occurring across the entire simulated environment. Bit of a mouthful. So you can see here on the third column, the blue column here, again, this is just showing us all the different combinations. So we've got Prism, Client, Aragon, we've got there's Nimbus, Nethermind, Nimbus, Besu, all kind of serialized, and you can see that, you know, we've got a concept of time running through. So this blown up piece is basically the stack trace of showing us kind of what is happening, and Nimbus is having some issue. It's receiving some JSON, that's clearly not doing too well for it, so because it basically crashes the entire node. So we go, okay, this is cool. This is why I kind of go, yeah, you know, this has got something of interest here. Another example here. This is just from Prism. Again, I don't love sort of seeing panics, but like, you know, it does show that there's something like of value here that we're really stressing the entire environment. So again, invalid memory address, nil point dereference. Yeah, okay, cool. What do we do now? You know, do we just send it to the client team? Well, yeah, you can, and they might go, I wrote that code, I can see what's going on here. She had to do it, didn't she? If she could turn back time. Well, the great news about deterministic environments is you can turn back time, right? So we're going to basically jump into the actual environment and actually say, okay, right, when does this manifest? Like, it crashes. Was it a second ago? Was it 5 seconds ago? What happened in the execution paths of all the different operating nodes with all the fault injection going on, or was it? Where do we see this like actual kind of thing manifest? And so we want to look back so many seconds. We may want to turn on packet capture. Packet capture isn't by default just because of the amount of data, but it isn't turned on by default. We want to be quite selective about kind of where we see packet capture happening. And then we can look at the data, see, again, we can rerun it. Again, obviously, determinism, you're stressing a little bit of kind of, will it still be deterministic if I suddenly turn on packet capture at a moment in time? We have to look at that. But what we've seen is actually, yeah, you generally, if you've seen something, you know, manifest, then we can actively kind of turn on things to help kind of debug and work out what's going on. Got some really interesting stuff coming through next year, which I can't share, but really cool. So this is what we can do today, and this is what we've done with the EF, is basically look at this mountain of data. Like, you know, you think of all the stuff that's going on, all the different scenarios, branches, paths of execution that have happened. We have all these available in a big, massive data set. So we can look at this kind of analysis and look at the x-axis, which is your time, versus the probability of the bug occurring on the y-axis. Now, the top right is where the bug is seen. We can then look at the common routes that are happening across all the data and try and then bring it together to see, well, what is happening. You know, where does the execution occur where suddenly the probability of this actually becoming a bug, you know, happen? And lo and behold, we have a huge jump here from literally 0.05% of kind of the bug occurring to over 50%. This jump here in the middle, we can start to go, okay, right, we know how many seconds to go back now. We can actually replay that simulation and turn back time, I won't sing it, and see what's going on there, because otherwise you're looking for a needle in a haystack. Like, how do you do that? And that's really been really valuable in our efforts. So what's next? Well, merge is great, love it. We're doing some post-merge testing on some stable branches, which isn't, you know, we've got, you know, things in a fairly good order there. But we know Ethereum's not standing still. We've got, obviously, EIP 4844 just around the corner. I'll say it again. Dank sharding withdrawals, you know, a whole host of new capability, which is, you know, brand new product, brand new code, brand new testing. There's the other pieces in there around, you know, actually, one that's interesting is using things like malicious clients. You know, what about if I brought up an environment that has a client that is, you know, not doing what it should be doing? You know, can that cause issues? You know, how does that kind of part of the code for the rest of the network handle that client? And does it operate in a great manner? So other pieces here, you merge code cleanup, you know, there's changes to, you know, kind of established pieces of code that are in place now. All those changes introduce, you know, problems could go down, you know, could appear downstream. So pretty cool. We're working actively with the clients and open to really, you know, kind of broadening that relationship further. So that's the end of that. Q&A. Any questions?
Yeah, you showed us a slide with the probability of finding a bug. How did you calculate that probability? Which model you were using? Yeah. Or how complex is, you know, the calculations and that stuff?
That's a good question. So just because of the amount of data we've got available, we know every kind of path execution that's occurring, that the outcome doesn't occur with the bug, and we have then obviously all the different outcomes that do translate to the bug happening. And so with the ability to, you know, do some simple calculation, we can see that, you know, the path that's sort of trodden and worn, and, you know, if we see this happening, then we and calculate the bug occurring. There are obviously other branches down that well-trodden path where it diverges and goes somewhere else, and the bug doesn't manifest. So that's how we, at every point in that graph, we can calculate if, you know, if it does contribute or not contribute to the bug.
How do you kind of isolate unique bugs? So I don't know, it's like the same bug.
That's a good question. So we see a huge amount of bugs that do manifest and show duplication, like the one you saw with Nimbus and Geth. That we can run that literally day in, day out, and it will, you know, with the right commit code, which is in history, but we would be able to see that, and we have counts on that occurrence, so we can see very quickly this isn't just like an edge case that's just happened on one sort of combined client set. It's a problem across the board. And so we have all of that wrapped up into our reporting.
And what do you think about applying formal verification in this huge environment? Is it, do you think, a possibility or?
I'm actually not the best person to answer that question.
Yeah, okay.
But bring it to us at the end, because I've got some people that can answer that question for you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Game over. Well, please reach out to us. Keep the conversation going, and I hope you enjoyed the talk.